I mean, at least ancient Greece had naked Olympics.
There is that.
Why didn't we get that?
Modesty.
Thanks, Queen Victoria.
God forbid you have naked wrestling going on.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pot of the South, a production of Change Tennessee. Pull up a chair and refill your sweet tea as we peel back the layers of Southern politics to get a better understanding of what's going on and why it matters. My name is Gabe, and joining me today, is, as always, is Knoxville's gayest forger of shiny math rocks, Maggie Loveday.
Hey, everyone.
And today, we actually have our very first recurring guest, so Nathan, congratulations on unlocking that challenge coin of being insane enough to come back onto this show. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Nathan from our very first redistricting episode, he runs up the Blount County Democratic Party as well as Indivisible East Tennessee. So again, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us again.
Happy to be crazy enough to be here.
So today we're actually going to kind of take a look at the start of the legislative session that's here in Tennessee that started up not too long ago, and it's already shaping up to be one hell of a session. So definitely lots of stuff to keep an eye out on that's going to be coming out over the next few weeks as the session goes on for about 45 days. It's a pretty short session. But before we get into that, Nathan, what is something that you feel just needs a good spotlight right now?
So, you know, out here in Blount County, if you look at it, there are about 100 elected offices, give or take, in Blount County. And despite all of the rhetoric from the alt-right folks out here, we only have 4 Democrats elected to office. So the 100 number makes it kind of easy. That means we have about 4% of the offices. So 96% of the elected offices are filled by people in the Republican Party or whatever other party they actually are, but are running under the Republican banner. And so something that really needs some light shone on it is people in Blount County vote approximately 35% Democratic in every election, sometimes barely more. So if that were the case, it means that we should hold about a third of the offices out here. We should have about 35 to 40 people elected in Blount County, not 4. And that's something that I think is a problem and needs some light shone on it.
I mean, it's very much like the supermajority that we deal with at the state level that, you know, there's no compromise. It's like, nope, this is what we're going to do. And that's what you're fighting down there in Blount County, especially, you know, as like as the chair for the Blount County Democratic Party. I mean, you are kind of between a rock and a hard place because you're trying to get shit done. But when you only have 4 people representing the entire county, like you can't get shit done because they can just be screamed down at any meeting.
Anything. And then I think the biggest issue, and you've touched on something, is how, you know, we look at the supermajority and national, and the problem is when we don't have people on the local level, all it does is, you know, the old saying, cream rises to the top. Well, so do dead fish, and they just rise themselves up through the ranks. So you get the same people who are holding this supermajority on a local level. And anyone who's ever heard me rant about politics knows that local politics are by far the thing I'm most passionate about. And you get all these people, and then there's nothing to ever gatekeep them. And then they just keep rising up. I mean, proof positive is Tim Burchett. I mean, he rose himself through all the ranks, you know, and here now he is in Washington, D.C., and no one to ever say no.
Because it's like you said, you know, the dead fish rise to the top. You get that momentum at the local level because you have no competition there. And then you can just catapult that into a national role.
Which can be pretty devastating in the long run.
Which is horrible all the way around. Because then it just means that a disproportionate majority of constituents, and they are almost exclusively marginalized folks, don't have a voice to represent them or stand up for things to help them along. I mean, we're looking at it right now with the voting rights bill.
I think the filibuster is doing a pretty good job for the voting rights bill. I mean, we don't actually need to have any legislation get passed to give people a fighting chance to make their voice heard. Let the 50 or so senators just continue to fuck over everybody. That's been the American way for quite some time. And
you know, that's one of the reasons it doesn't get any better in the Tennessee General Assembly is simply that, you know, we talked about the dead fish rising, and then we come back to, as you started the podcast, Gabe, you know, the Tennessee General Assembly is a part-time legislature. So who can go take a job that pays approximately $25,000 a year? I mean, they've got all their other expenses, so it comes out closer to 60. But anyway, who can take a $25,000 a year part-time job? Not very many people. You've got to be wealthy to begin with. And what normal person's going to be like, hey, McDonald's, can I have 4 months off to go to Nashville to make the world a better place, or at least Tennessee? No, absolutely not. And that's how we end up with these problems over and over and over. And it's why the same hate-filled legislation gets dragged out every session.
And again, it all starts at the local level, where you can be a county commissioner, a city commissioner, and build up your base there to where you can have a consulting firm or be some type of advisor to Joe Smith's landscaping company, where they'll put you on the books and let you do whatever the hell you want. So you can go dig off for 4 months in Nashville and then come back and collect money from Joe Smith and then go down the street to Jane Doe's hair salon and be a consultant for them too.
And that full circled it back to the local. And that's the thing that bugs me, is we find it so hard to get proper representation because there's that good old boy network you just mentioned that doesn't allow the proper representation of people in municipalities and counties all across the state of Tennessee. And that's something that bugs me, is outside of Memphis and outside of Shelby County and Davidson County, if most of the other counties have representation that doesn't look like the people in the district. And that's a problem.
Maggie, if you recall when Drew came on and did the state legislature, I mean, he laid it out pretty well. The closer a governing body is to you, the more it matters in your life. The quicker that whatever resolutions or laws that they passed impact you much sooner and much quicker. When was the last time someone sued the city of Maryville or sued Blount County over some bullshit thing that they passed?
Really, if ever, yeah.
But, you know, at Tennessee or the federal level, we see lawsuits all the time. You know, Governor Lee's got like 8 on his plate right now. So, you know, you see at the higher levels, the laws don't have as big of an impact. But here at the local level, where we don't have that representation, the every little thing that the county commissions and the city commissions and the school boards do has huge ripples through those communities.
I could rant about that forever, but I will save you all. I can deep dive into how just a little tip of it, of how just like property issues and zoning issues are some of the things that affect you as an individual on a daily basis. I always remind people, you know, everyone gets all up in arms about federal politics. I'm like, hang on. If you would just set yourself down with a piece of paper and write a list of what irritates me, and under that column, mark those things out, and then actually go and draw the line to which level of government it is responsible for that. About 80% of the time, the things that really grind your gears are local, and the potholes in the road, or your neighbor's tree falling in your yard, or this or that, those aren't things that you can go call Tim Burchett to fix. That's something, there's like probably a tree board or your city council. And 9 times out of 10 anymore, with the exponential growth in East Tennessee, it's zoning issues where we don't have enough affordable housing. It's all land development and issues with developers. There's my tip of the iceberg. I promise I'll stop there.
You need to stop there anyway, because before we like turn this into a local politics, local election podcast episode, which we definitely need to go back and redo that, do another one on that and kind of drill down a little deeper. But I do want to talk about the legislative session and kind of what we've seen so far. But before we hop into that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll see you when we come back. Our sponsor this week, Charles Koch, has made it his life's work to influence state and local legislatures in order to further his personal gain. Dating back to before his brother's failed vice presidential run, Charles Koch has spent several fortunes making sure local policy is always in his favor. Charles Koch, if I fund their campaigns, then I get to make their rules. Thank you again for joining us. And today we're going to talk about the kickoff of the latest legislative session in Tennessee, which started up about mid-January. So by the time this comes out, it'll kind of be in the swing of things, but we definitely will have lots to talk about and going forward that to keep an eye on. Kind of the biggest thing that I think has caught the national spotlight right now that they've done is the redistricting maps. We've talked in the past several times about redistricting and gerrymandering. So I don't want that to take over this session because there's lots of other stuff to talk about too. Stuff that was kicked around kind of in the emergency sessions that will probably dictate a lot of what's going forward. But I do want to talk a little bit about those district maps as well, because that's kind of the headline right now. And kind of what we've seen so far is that all of the rumors that were floating around during the past few months about how the supermajority and the GQP were going to do everything in their power to silence the voices of marginalized populations has been 100% true. You know, Shelby County has been divided up into multiple districts. Nashville, Davidson County has been divided up, I believe, into three districts. Knoxville has been split up significantly. Chattanooga has been split up significantly. So kind of anywhere that there was a majority-minority population, the GQP has done everything in their power to split those up and to dilute that voting block. So kind of, Nathan, I want to now turn it over to you and kind of what have you seen, you know, because you were on for our redistricting episode. So what have you seen that really sticks out to you from what we've seen so far at the kickoff of this legislative session?
So interestingly, with the redistricting, because we've seen the congressional maps and the state Senate maps, and State Senator Heidi Campbell, they actually made her district a little bluer, so it would be easier for her to get reelected. However, it made it much worse for some of the other folks in and around the Nashville area and state Senate seats. Look over here, I'm going to bring it back home, here in Blount County. Presently, State Senate District 2 is all Blount County and part of Sevier County. But if they change this, it will become all of Blount County and Monroe County and Polk County and part of Bradley County. So State Senate District 2, where I currently am, will become about 120 miles long. And I would be in a State Senate District with people up in the mountains in Polk County and almost into Chattanooga, which is absolutely insane considering Blount County borders Knox County. So these are some of the kind of issues that they're doing with this ridiculous gerrymandering. And of course, I know you probably already talked about in previous episode about how they're splitting up the congressional districts so it would kind of write out Representative Cooper and Nashville. And then of our nine, it would give the GOP eight of the nine congressional districts in Tennessee, which again is absurd when about statewide, we've got approximately 40% who vote Democratic and one out of nine. I'm not good at math, but that math doesn't work in my head.
Something like 11%, 11.1, 11.2%, something like that.
And they won't be happy till it's 0%.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing is because, you know, these are our elected officials. This is the legislative session to discuss how we can move Tennessee forward. And just like you were talking about earlier with Blount County only having four Democrats out of the 100 seats, when you only have 11% representation, you know, however shitty the breakdown is going to look like at the state level when the it's already a supermajority, 65% Republican GQP, you can't do anything. You're not going to move forward. It's an autocracy of the ruling party, which is the exact same thing that led to like every revolution in the past when you had one ruling party like fucking shit up. And they're doing that exactly here in Tennessee. And no one's doing anything about it. They're just like, yep, cool. Here's our new maps. Like, we can't move forward if you're only hearing one voice at the table.
They want one voice at the table.
Something that irritates me is that when they do stuff like this, these ridiculous redistricting plans, then what happens? Then the Tennessee Democratic Party, along with a number of other voting rights groups, have filed lawsuits. So what we have to do is, where's the culpability, right? These legislators make patently unconstitutional or illegal laws or changes, knowing that it's going to have to go to court. So let alone are they not expressing the wishes of Tennesseans, they're also wasting Tennesseans' money by making these things go in to the court system, and then we have to pay for their erroneous legislation. That's something that bugs me more than that, because if there's anything I can sometimes get fiscally conservative on, it's when you put your hand in my pocket with tax money, let me know what you're using it for. And using it to support salacious, ridiculous, absolutely horrible, sorry, I had to really build that one up, redistricting, gerrymandering issues, and then you're going to go spend my tax dollars to fight it in court? No.
The party of fiscal responsibility, and there's nothing more responsible than lining the pockets of these attorneys that are just going to go and redonate that money into your campaign.
It's conservative money laundering.
Essentially.
But what you kind of just said, even though we talked a little bit about redistricting, it's a good segue for something I want to talk about later too, is, you know, some of these bills that came up during the special sessions that are going to be, that are either in lawsuits right now or are going to be reintroduced and will be more lawsuits. Before we segue into that, I also kind of want to talk about some of the other shitty stuff here, speaking in Knoxville, Knox County. You know, we were talking before we started reporting, one of our, I forget which neighborhood it is here in town, but within that single neighborhood, it's split up into three different districts. Like, you could walk over to your neighbor's house at the other end of your subdivision and go through three congressional districts. And one of the biggest things that we've been talking about since the district maps plan started coming in place was keep communities united. And when you're splitting up a subdivision community into three different districts, you're watering down their ability to advocate for themselves. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, that's what you're talking about in Blount County, where, you know, you're having to go up against Polk County to have the same representation. You're having to go up against Bradley County, which is a fucking suburb of Chattanooga.
Makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. Well, it makes sense if you want to stay in power. It makes perfect sense for that.
I think the other thing that they like to be able to take advantage of is the fact that, you know, we're all tired. Like, most marginalized folks are tired because they're having to deal with their being marginalized. So then they know they're not going to have to stand up and fight for their ability to have a district that makes fucking sense for them.
And so, yeah, you know that firsthand, Maggie, with like your advocacy with the Tennessee Native American populations. Like, you guys have been really fucked over when it comes to representation because you're on the outskirts. And then you're pushed even further out because of the ethnic cleansing that the American forefathers did.
It's exhausting on so many lengths of time.
So you have no energy left to advocate. You know, you're exhausted and you're like, okay, where do I focus my energy to fight back? Is it this? No, I need to focus it over here. So it's, you know, it's another strategy for them to divide and conquer to where you're not invested 100%. And, you know, I think a lot of organizers, we talked about this with Afton, where they're just burnt out at this point. You know, they've been fighting every fight for so long, they're exhausted. And so it's kind of getting to the point where it's like, you know, what do we fight for? Because clearly we can't even have representation that matters to our community anymore with these maps that have been introduced in the session.
And then I'm eager, speaking of marginalized folks, I'm eager to see what the slate of hate is going to look like this year. Because they can't hate LGBTQ folks enough.
Ain't nothing easier than hating us gays.
Well, you know, Maggie, that's the thing. It's like, and as you were mentioning, Gabe, about the exhaustion, the problem is they come at an activist from all fronts. And that's how you get worn down. It's literally every group. And if you are someone, and we all are, someone with multiple identities, whatever they may be, when you get 2, 3, 5, you know, or more of your identities attacked regularly, it's like you said, Gabe, where do you focus your energy? And then it can cause all kinds of difficulties for people trying to figure out how to prioritize. Well, you know, they hate me, but which thing that they hate me am I most willing to fight about this year or this week or today?
Yeah, my favorite thing whenever I go to go vote is which one is good, am I voting for is more likely to attack the least of me.
And, you know, kind of talking about the slate of hate, I think that's a great pivot because we alluded to it before. I didn't want to quite jump into it yet, but some of the special session bills that were introduced that are currently, you know, facing federal lawsuits or in federal court over them, but they're just going to tweak it and reintroduce it during this session, you know, and a lot of it has COVID relief and trying to get us out of this fucking pandemic that we've been in now for 2 years. I mean, we're all exhausted, but they don't want to do anything. They just want to keep, you know, keep the state open, keep it open. Yet here we are now, as of this week of reporting, Knox County has now had to close schools 2 days in a row because the cases, there are so many teachers and administrators out sick.
Which is, I mean, if you think about that, that's insane. Like, we just don't have healthy enough administrators or teachers to be able to care for our children. And one of the things that's very interesting is if you look at Tennessee's numbers as far as hospitalizations, it's not terrible because of the vaccines, but the people that are being hospitalized are unvaccinated and they're all in the same circles. And it's only going to go one way from here, guys. You gotta, you're just going to keep spreading it around to each other kind of thing. But, and there's so many teachers. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm scared about going back to UT is because I don't know what's going to happen with my classes when they start back. How often am I going to be able to go to my classes because of maybe my teachers are going to be sick and I'm paying for this education. It's not public school. I'm paying for this. But no, UT's not going to make a stand on going virtual or, you know, everyone has to be vaccinated or everyone has to wear masks because they're in Bill Lee's pocket and Bill Lee doesn't want to shut the state down.
Exactly. And that's exactly where I was going to go with that when you were talking about that is, if they do anything proactive to try to curb the spread of the virus on campus, they're going to lose funding, or it's going to become so incredibly difficult for them to get funding going forward. We saw it when the president, at the very outset of the pandemic, when the president stepped in and tried to put in some restrictions and make campus a little safer, the huge pushback and pearl clutching about freedom and coming and creating like liberal think spaces and whatever other boilerplate complaining that they're going to do came out of Nashville about that.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things that was frustrating for me was, you know, listening to someone who is a teacher on campus and he has to listen to all of these other teachers and meetings talk about how they shouldn't have to get vaccinated because of this, 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 and this. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, if you were a teacher, like if you were, UT has a medical hospital that is for the college, they teach in that hospital. Those teachers don't get to be able to choose not to have that vaccine, because if they did, they wouldn't be able to work. They would be endangering their students and their patients. But because you work in a lab on the, I guess, the geology side, you don't want to get a vaccine or something like that and endanger your students and the other people around you. I mean, it's insane. But they're not going to force it because, you know, like, yeah, sure, you do have a freedom to choose, but also why wouldn't you choose better? Like, why wouldn't you care about other people?
You know, that's like the junior slate of hate, where you hate actually caring about your neighbors. You hate having to give a shit about someone other than yourself. And I think, you know, Nathan, like what you were saying, like the major slate of hate where they go after the minority populations, like the racial minority populations or the ethnic minority populations and the LGBTQ community, you know, the sexual minority populations. I mean, we're going to see that ramped up you know, it might not necessarily be about gay marriage or something like that, but they're going to transition it into attacking the trans community. I mean, we're already seeing that over in Farragut, the trans student that filed a lawsuit because they weren't allowed to play on the golf team of their choosing.
They just pander to their base over and over and over and over and over.
Like, if you were going to make an argument, like, I disagree with it wholeheartedly at any level, but I'll give a minutia of credence to the people who make the argument in full contact sports. But we're talking about fucking golf here. All high school golfers are garbage. You're all garbage. It doesn't matter.
You're playing golf. That doesn't matter. And if you someday go pro at some point in time, I hope you know by the age of like 34, you're going to realize you put all of your eggs in the wrong basket. You're going to have no idea what to do with the rest of your life.
But that's exactly where the pivot's going to be on the slate of hate. I mean, we saw it, like I said, you know, we saw it kind of outside of the session through their stump speeches. And now they're going to be, now they're in session. So now they'll be able to make those stump speeches bills that will affect thousands of students across Tennessee.
Because they're willfully incapable of governing, Gabe, is the problem. If they can't go after, I love how the GOP always wags their finger and says it's Democrats are always just being virtue signaling or bringing up culture. That it's always Democrats stoking the culture war. But I'm like, no, man, it's you all that are always talking about hating Black people, hating LGBTQ folks. And that's all you attempt to legislate on. It's like, pass infrastructure bills or things that can make the state better, but they just focus on crap because they are completely incapable. Well, most of them are really unintelligent. And I mean that. And having spoken with far too many of these people that are Republican state legislators, I mean, they're not smart people. And these are not the people who should have the reins to billions of state dollars, but they do. And since they're not smart and all they're worried about is getting reelected again, we get the same crap over and over. So there'll always be a slate of hate. There's always going to be easy buzzword stuff.
Clickbait articles. Like they're literally just clickbait articles as people. And I will say, any person that is running for local, state, anything like that, that is over the age of, let's say 40 at this point, which is most everyone, y'all some idiots. And you're ignorant because of the public school system did you an injustice. I will give you that. But you're also not looking for more. Like you're not searching to learn anything else. And most of the people that are going to be running for a local legislator in Rogersville, local positions in Rogersville in the next couple of years are people that I went to school with. I'm fucking terrified. I know they're not smart.
And, you know, you brought up a good point about the age where at all levels of government, it's a gerontocracy. There's very few young people in those elected positions that actually have a pulse on what's going on.
Or just a pulse.
100% believe that if you reach the age of retirement or like you could officially sign up for AARP, you shouldn't be able to be in government anymore.
Then we come back to that issue of, and it's the why we have so much trouble recruiting younger candidates is who can take time away from their job to go do it? Or who wants to take time away from the career they've dreamt of to go run for office? I mean, I agree with you, Maggie. I'm just also the counterpoint is it's tough. It's really made for people looking for a second or third career.
And I think I will say that we have been lucky in the past. I'll say the past like five to 10 years. We have been very lucky with the fact that there are people that are looking to enter local, state, and federal government that have been something in the past, like teachers, educators, scientists, doctors, that have a pretty good foundation of education and want to bring that to their local, state, or higher government to be able to make things better kind of thing.
Yeah, because far too frequently when young people run, it seems to be and this is a generalization, of course, but it seems to be people with an axe to grind, where when you have older folks running, they have a lifetime of experience. And I'm not saying that either of those things are better or worse, because I myself will encourage people to run regardless of whether they know all the issues or they're just a single issue candidate. I'm not making excuses for any of this, though, for sure.
What you were saying, Maggie, you know, there are some, and Nathan too, like, we know, recruiting some younger folks to bring in fresh blood into the political sphere. I mean, look up in Clarksville at their city council. I mean, Ashley Evans is super young.
And she's killing it.
Yeah, killing it. And then bringing new life into Clarksville. And, you know, that will be one of those where, you know, hopefully she can build that base and launch into a larger career to help people out and get to the state level, you know, where one of those where the cream rises instead of the dead fish, because he has a pulse on what's going on. But, you know, it's going to take time for her to be able to build, or individuals like Ashley to be able to build that base, to be able to make it to the state level where they can start influencing the legislative sessions to move us forward. And that's if they don't get burnt out and metaphorically murdered in the process, because the moment a young leftist starts running for any elected official, I mean, we've seen how quickly the GQP will dogpile on them and just try to not even attack their policy, but just character assassination on them. You know, what really comes to mind is the Squad, AOC, Ilhan Omar, those younger leftists who are trying to get shit done at the national level. But all the attacks on them have nothing to do with their policy. It's all character assassination.
Yeah, it literally has nothing to do with what they're trying to move and shake up there. They're just about, well, she wore red lipstick.
And it's stopped them from being able to get involved at the state level to get real bills that matter passed. You know, Tennessee has one of the highest medical debt ratios in the country, if not the highest. And you know how many bills are going to be introduced to expand Medicare, or how many bills that will be, you know, make it actually to the floor and out of committee to expand Medicare? None. They'll never make it out of committee, or they'll be constantly be assigned to committee, because that would actually help people. But it goes against the GQP mantra, even though they're leaving billions of dollars on the table. The fiscally responsible party doesn't want it.
Her basis for our whole government also doesn't make any sense. What is it? Like, you know, most great civilizations only last about 500 years, and we're getting real close there, buddy. We're getting really close.
The end of the empire.
Looking at history, Western liberalism, it doesn't live up to the ideals that Ben Shapiro would have you believe it lives up to. You know, as much as he wants to talk about how great ancient Rome was, I mean, it went down hard. And, you know, like exactly like what you said, Maggie, you know, we're kind of seeing that here where, again, I'm using liberalism in the classical sense, you know, we're seeing what it can do, because it gives these absolutely batshit insane individuals platforms where if they can get a few people on board with them, they can snowball that into a political career and have the slate of hate. They can have zero repercussions for their actions.
And ancient Rome was awful. It was becoming very similar, today is becoming very similar to them, where it's a concentration of wealth at the top, a highly stratified society. They own slaves. I mean, we have very similar looking today as to then. And it's, I wouldn't call, much as you said, Gabe, I wouldn't call today great. And I sure wouldn't call what they were doing phenomenal either.
We definitely have, you know, some things to look forward to. We've kind of alluded to like the slate of hate, that we're going to see the different variations of it coming up. You know, these district maps, there's no way that they're going to stand the way they are. Just because, you know, kind of how we talked about how some of those communities are being divvied up, especially those majority minority communities, because the Supreme Court has ruled that you cannot draw districts upon racial signifiers. But that definitely seems to be the route that the GQP took in drawing these maps. And then COVID relief of actually trying to get us out of this pandemic, I think are going to be the big three things that we're going to see going on over these next few weeks as this session gets underway. Is there anything else that you think that we need to be on the lookout for, Nathan, or things that, you know, maybe kind of flying under the radar that they'll try to sneak in?
Yeah, they're going to try to attack public education. Invariably, there'll be some bills that will try to, and I've read something and I was trying to look it up and I couldn't find it. They're going to try to take public money and sling into private schools, predominantly private religious schools. So to take public money into schools where the curriculum doesn't have to be controlled in the same way, so they can be, again, indoctrinated however they want. And so I always see an attack coming for the public school system. They love to do it.
That's a good point. Yeah, because we talked about COVID, and that's kind of what they're using as the springboard for it, despite how wildly unpopular the voucher program was when it was first introduced. And, you know, now I think they have a springboard, have a talking point for how they can reintroduce the voucher program and might be able to get it through because of that.
That's been one of my biggest fears, Gabe, was that the pandemic was going to parlay its way into more destructive legislation for public education. I kept thinking that as I was seeing them push back, you know, on masks and restrictions. I'm like, oh man, they're just going to use this to dismantle public education even more. Because not to swerve too far away, but you know, we see it like in the Knox County School Board. We see this on the local levels, and they're trying to do some of the same things. Obviously, they don't control the purse the way the state does, but they're trying to condone vouchers, etc. So, you know, it's just coming from all fronts again. So I definitely see them on the state level trying to craft crappy legislation that will make it easier for local boards of education to dismantle public education, which makes no sense in my head why someone would run for office for something that they hate, but I digress.
You can go ask Glenn Jacobs on that one, how you don't think government should exist, so you're going to head up a county government. The beautiful logic of the Libertarian Party.
Own guns and smoke weed, y'all. Woo!
And that's also like half of like anarchist leftists too. We just want you to be able to have a functioning society and like not have human fingers in my sausage that I'm buying at the grocery store or child labor. But you know, I think that's a good kind of point to end on, you know, of some of the stuff that they're going to try to sneak in under the guise of other things, you know, kind of distract you with one hand while they're robbing you with the other. It's definitely going to be something I think to keep an eye out in this session as well. But with that, I think we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we have a few people that could just use a good old bless your heart. So stay tuned. From school boards to state senators, Charles Koch knows how important state and local elections are. That's why he has made it his and the Kochtopus's goal to get the most dogmatic individuals elected to those positions. Charles Koch, the more dedicated they are to my cause, the more work they will do for me. Everybody, thank you for tuning in with us so far. And before we close things out today, like I said, we have a few people that could just use a good old bless your heart to make it through the week.
It's Bless Your Heart with Bobby June.
Hello, hello. Oh my, you little angels. Look at you, just so wonderful. Thank you. And bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
And as our esteemed guest receiving their second episode challenge coin, Nathan, who do you think needs a good old bless your heart to make it through this week?
Mine is a group of people. This bless your heart goes out to folks who are afraid of pulling a nominating petition and running for office. I hear so many excuses of people saying, well, you know, it's going to cost too much money. Nope. That's what the party and supporters are there for, to help fund it. Oh, I just don't have time. They're not even part-time jobs. Oh, I couldn't possibly do it. People are going to talk bad about me. And I'm like, I see the things you're typing about other people on Facebook. Come on. You can do this. So my bless your heart is, if you've ever thought about running, now is the time. Go pull a petition. You have to get it turned back in until February the 17th at noon at your county election commission's office. And until you do that, I'm going to keep saying bless your heart to y'all. And I'm sure you've got something to weigh in on too, Maggie.
So my bless your heart is going to get really real, real fast. And my bless your heart is to all of the good old boys in Knoxville that believe that they can Harvey Weinstein their way through the owning of restaurants, serving, and brewery industries. I'm coming for y'all, and get ready. Bless your heart if you think that you can continue to treat your employees the way that you have been and the way that you think you can get away with it, because you can't.
You would think right now, when it's a completely employee market, that the small business ruling class like would figure shit out and not treat people like shit and or sexually harass them. But clearly that has not been learned.
I think it's pretty bad when you know of an owner of a company who has sexually assaulted three other people besides you, and they are acting like they've done nothing wrong and everything's perfectly fine. So you decide to just go ahead and go forward with a police report because you're tired of people getting away with things.
They've done it once. You know they've done it again before, but no one has had the courage to step up and say anything because our system loves to victim shame and victim blame.
100%. And it's going to be one hell of a ride in order to deal with it. But bless y'all's hearts, because you think you're going to get away with it, but you're not.
So kind of segueing off of that, talking about how the system loves to victim shame and victim blame, my bless your heart goes out to all of those still diehard back the blue individuals out there. Kind of what makes me talk about this is the recent synagogue that was held up in Texas by an extremist terrorist, where the police did absolutely jack all to de-escalate the situation, where it was actually the rabbi and the congregants who did everything to stop the terrorist attack. To where the point where the police report was completely inaccurate, not reporting it as an anti-Semitic attack, saying that the fact that they were Jews in a synagogue had nothing to do with it. And the only thing that they actually did was kill a man in a synagogue. They killed an individual in a house of worship.
Only in Texas would they downgrade something other than a church.
And I think that this Texas situation proves the very valid point that the police don't actually do anything to prevent law breaking. The police exist to punish individuals after they break the law. You know, if we were actually proactive in preventing crime, we would have anti-extremist education out there to keep these people from being radicalized into whatever their belief system is, but we don't. Instead, we have to make sure that the police of Rogersville, that the police of Bean Station have an MRAP. That way they can drive around the block showing how they just spent $300,000 taxpayer dollars on a really cool Humvee that can survive IEDs in the middle of the suburb.
I think something that's also really important is to think about the fact that that would also require them to let all of the Nazis and KKK that are in their ranks go, which we don't see happening anytime soon.
The Oath Keepers have a stranglehold on law enforcement in the United States, and again, like you said, you know, doing anything to actually prevent crime would mean that we would not be able to have the right-wing extremists running our law enforcement agencies. So police don't actually do anything, and if you think they do, bless your heart. All right, folks, thank you everyone for joining us today. We had a great time, especially, again, thank you to Nathan for coming on again. Now, while we're here, do you have an internet home or any pluggables, Nathan?
You can find me on all the socials at JNathanHigdon. And you can follow my pictures on Instagram or Twitter, where I rant about politics sometimes.
Maggie, what about you? Where do you live on the World Wide Web?
Currently, I live at LILMISSKNIT, Lil Misnit, on both Instagram and Twitter. I may be kind of silent for the next few weeks because I am getting ready for my wedding. So if you guys are wondering where the heck I've been, that's where I've been, is dealing with all of that.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @pod_south. You can find me on Twitter at @graham851. Also, make sure to leave us those sweet, sweet 5-star reviews as they help others discover us and hear the siren song of Appalachian leftists. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachian. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.